This is Scenic Roots. I'm so happy to tell you that this afternoon we have a new session recorded in the library just 2 weeks ago. This is the first session we have recorded in the State of the Art studio in the Chattanooga Downtown Library in almost 6 months. Oh, it's a treat. This is Alan Chicot. Thank you.
always found myself torn between being a classical guitar player, being a jazz guitar player, which you'll hear in the set.
That's what I find interesting about what you do. A lot of the tunes that you were playing, there comes a point where you go, oh, okay, I know what that is. Because you're deconstructing them the way a jazz player would deconstruct them. But your approach seems to be that of a classical fingerstyle guitar player.
I guess stylized is the word I would use. I mean, they're stylized arrangements. They're not meant to sound improvisatory. They're notated, every single note, and everything's worked out. But I do want to retain some spirit of a jazz player in the deconstructing of the tunes and some of the harmonies. But there's a certain kind of stylized approach to these arrangements that certainly been done before in throughout the 50s and 60s. A lot of Brazilian guitarists and sort of crossover jazz popular guitarists of that period, Louis Bonfa, Lorenzo Almeida, Charlie Byrd. I mean, these were super popular guitar players back in the day, which is amazing when I get the record, the LP jacket out, and they're gold records, a lot of them. And it's so amazing to me that style of guitar could have been so popular and now be such a novelty. I mean, often I'll go play somewhere and play tunes like this, and sometimes your average layperson that maybe, you know, doesn't spend a lot of time listening to jazz or classical guitar records thinks that it's something very, very novel and original to play solo guitar in the first place, A, but B, to play all the parts yourself and not just play like a jazz guitar player, which is either chords or melody or single note improvisation. It's like, well, you know, I appreciate it. You know, thanks for the encouraging words, but actually, you know, you should check these records out because these guys were doing it years before I was. But it is a balance for me to try to keep everything as accessible as possible. I do like to deconstruct the tunes. I'm an avid fan of jazz harmony and try to steal as much as I can from real jazzers and apply it to my more classical approach to the tunes. But I enjoy a certain kind of spiciness and dissonance in the harmony, but I do want to keep it as accessible as possible. And it's always a fine line that I'm trying to straddle with that approach.
When did you start playing the guitar?
I started playing when I was 12 years old in the seventh grade at the Macaulay School. By happenstance, serendipity, there was a classical guitar program that started there at the school my first year. My father said, you have to take Glee Club, and you got to try that, because he sang up through college. Said, you got to try it, but you can also take guitar, and if you don't like Glee Club after a semester, you don't have to do it anymore. So, yeah, the Glee Club didn't even last through the semester, I don't think. And immediately, and this was a classroom classical guitar approach. But even at 12 years old, I mean, I couldn't put it down and was soaking everything up very quickly and working through, you know, books on my own, and was already learning solo pieces within, you know, a few months.
And yet, the way you expressed that, it sounded as almost as if it was happenstance that you started playing the guitar. Because they were offering the classes, you picked up the guitar. Is that not the case?
Yeah, it absolutely is the case. I mean, I had an electric guitar around the same time. I actually don't recall if it was the Christmas before that year or maybe after, but I had an electric guitar, and my dad had an acoustic and electric, and he played a few chords and, you know, would read some tablatures online and stuff, and had a good ear. But I mean, he certainly wouldn't have considered himself, you know, much of a musician. So I won't say it was around the house. My mother also played the piano, but I didn't really think about music in those terms at all. I certainly didn't think about the guitar in those terms until taking that class. And then, you know, as I was studying classical guitar, you know, it was only 2 days a week in those days, but still, it was 2 days a week, and then a lesson one day a week, and then maybe another rehearsal. I mean, my week was pretty full with music stuff already, even as a seventh grader. But I started playing some electric guitar and poking around with that with friends at the same time. And I think I'm just lucky that, A, that the everything lined up to where I could be introduced to music the way that I was, but also that I was in an environment at the Macaulay School where I had formal music education, learning to read and learning proper classical guitar in class, but also had a very rich environment of playing electric guitar and bass and student bands and things like that, with, you know, fortunately the resources and the people and the support and encouragement to kind of poke around with that stuff too. And for me, it all just came together right away. It was immediately obvious that that's what I wanted to do, and that I liked all of it, not just the classical guitar, not just my, you know, dabbling in rock and roll playing.
You like the guitar.
Absolutely.
And all of the, you know, six strings and a wooden body. And it's amazing how many different ways that they can be played and how many different sounds can be created with what on the face of it, seems to be a relatively simple instrument.
Right, absolutely. And I think one of the benefits to being a guitar player, especially in today's day and age, I mean, if you can be the best classical pianist in the world, and you automatically have access to anything that's keyboard shaped. I mean, obviously playing the pipe organ is very different than playing the piano, but the notes are in the same place. I always, you know, get around and with piano players, at least the notes are in the same place, and you know, some skills will transfer, or some skills will transfer to playing a synthesizer and, you know, modern sort of electronic music or what have you. And I think that's the only sort of analogous instrument to what we have in the guitar world, which is it's the same six strings. It's typically tuned the same. And although playing electric guitar, classical guitar is very different, some skills do translate. And I've enjoyed being able to dabble in some other projects outside of this context, solo guitar. And what that's afforded me is kind of a refresher when I get a little stale or tired of what I'm doing in the solo guitar world and lacking in inspiration, I can pick up a different kind of guitar and a different kind of group and do that. And that's not the case with other instruments where, you know, there's either just the one instrument and you're stuck with it, or maybe it doesn't have a place in as many styles as the guitar does.
Most musicians, you know, they talk about playing, mastering the instrument, and then trying to find their voice, their unique expression with the instrument. But what you're saying, it sounds like you've got at least two different voices, depending on whether it's an electric guitar or an acoustic guitar, and your approach is different with each one.
It is. And well, I do have to give a caveat that I certainly am not, I don't play electric guitar to the level that I play other styles. But it's there. It's there for you to explore if you want it. And I think that my dabbling, I can only speak for myself, but I know that other guitar players must feel the same way, that the dabbling in other styles and on other guitars, it does inform your playing as a solo classical guitar player. And I think it certainly just the imagination and the spirit and finding that voice. And I know it's been pointed out to me that there are a lot of mannerisms in my classical playing that certainly don't come from my formal schooling, and they must come from, you know, from dabbling in those other areas. And I'm very thankful to have had the experience to sort of get some other things to add to my bag, because I know a lot of classical guitarists who, you know, will go through several degree programs. I stopped after the master's level, and I was burnt out of academia, you know, in guitar. And in some ways, everybody has the same story, that it makes you sort of not want to get the guitar out of the case and practice, you know, when you've just been in that world for so long. But I don't experience that, I think, as much as a lot of players do, because I do play, you know, play other styles. I know some classical guitarists that don't. They do nothing but classical guitar, and they play nothing but standard literature. And a lot of them have reached a mastery on the instrument that I just can only imagine and dream of. But I'm not saying I'm willing to accept less. I certainly, you know, have my sights set pretty high technically on the instrument and try to make my arrangements challenge my own playing. But for me, it doesn't have to be, you know, the most technically challenging, you know, playing, because it's about the music for me, and I think my imagination for what I'm trying to do with the arrangements, you know, comes from all sorts of different places, and not just the standard literature on the guitar.
Yeah, that's apparent. Although the people that you referenced as an influence on you, Louis Bonfire, Charlie Bird, their playing is essentially rhythmic as well as melodic.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to have eschewed the rhythmic part,
mm-hmm.
and you've revoiced the melodies and taken, there's a couple of songs you've played that have probably been played so many times that there are many people who can't even hear them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you have turned them inside out and made people recognize again what a beautiful piece of writing, What a Wonderful World is, for instance.
Mm.
Or even more, perhaps, from The Wizard of Oz.
Well, you're not the first person to point out that there's a certain kind of rhythmic vitality, like you pointed out, and an energy. And I think even more than a rhythmic style of playing, some of those players I mentioned, and basically all jazz musicians, have a certain fearlessness in their playing, that they'll jump in and just sort of figure it out as they go, whether that means they're improvising or not. That it's a very loose approach, and I'm not that kind of person in my social life or my personal life or anything else. I mean, I like to have everything very measured and figured out ahead of time. So in playing music like this, I mean, it could potentially come across as pretty lame to play canned arrangements of very ubiquitous tunes that everybody's heard a million times. Oh, I don't want to hear that again. So over the years, I've tried to figure out what can I bring to the table that maybe nobody else is doing or that suits me the best. And I found that this more rhythmically flexible style. I joke with some guitar friends that I've tried to combine some elements of like ambient music, you know, which I love, ambient electronic music, you know, with my guitar playing. I want to be able to stretch out and sort of get the harmonic ideas that I want across and enough space where one can hear the textures that I'm going for and some of the subtleties, but not be locked into this rhythmic structure that's just going to have me panting the whole time trying to run and keep up.
It seems to me a lot of players are trying to approximate a thunderstorm, where yours is more like a very light spring shower.
Right.
And that's what I like about what you do, is it's so filigree and so delicate. The ideal setting for you probably is just you with your guitar.
Right, and I've actually even, I'm very glad to hear that some of these aspects come out, because it's certainly what I'm going for. Not that every musician has to sit and think about how we're going to be perceived by everybody. I mean, hopefully we shouldn't care and just do our thing. But of course, we all think about it, you know, and even down to the way we dress and carry ourselves, you know. So I'm glad to hear that it comes across. But ultimately, yeah, I think right now I'm at a place where, as I revisit some of these old records and videos of live performances of some of my guitar idols, I do kind of wonder why there was such a fad of guitar players that were doing more or less kind of what I'm doing, playing on the biggest TV shows and radio shows and everything across the world, and were very, very popular and successful commercially. And just the idea of that day ever coming back around again just seems impossible in today's climate. And I'm not sure why, because there's bound to be a lot more people out there like myself who, it's not that I'm turned off of the aggressive types of, I think in the rock music today, I think if you want the best quality musicianship and highest level of playing on the guitar, you've got to go to the heavy metal genres. That's where the best playing is. People look at me like I'm crazy when I say that. I'm like, is that not obvious to everyone? I mean, you know, you have sort of a folk resurgence and even like ukulele playing and stuff kind of resurgence on the one end, but then the metal players, I mean, they've just got total command over the instrument and are pushing the boundaries. I mean, things that wouldn't have even been thought of as possible, you know, 20 years ago. But in that climate, it's like, oh, I'm gonna do my little thing over here and, you know, hope I can find someone who appreciates it. But it sure is in stark contrast to everything else that's going on.
In the end, you have to go back to, is there an audience for what I'm doing, right? At some point, you have to say, I can keep refining this, but am I refining myself out of a job? No, just the opposite, actually, I think. And that's the beauty of the way things are now. You're refining yourself into a position that's unassailable because it's only you.
Well, it's encouraging to hear. You know, I had a musician friend, a new friend of mine, I did a session with recently, and he asked me, he was just, you know, trying to get a feel for me personally, I think, and I appreciated the conversation with him, you know, outside of music. But he said, let me ask you a question. He said, why do you play music? But the crux of the conversation came down to, if there weren't anybody around to hear your music, you know, would you still play? It was kind of like what he was hinting at. And what he was looking for me to say, which he already figured me out, and just being an introverted person and the way I carry myself, I guess, is that I said, if I were on a desert island somewhere and there were no one to hear it, I mean, my passion for it wouldn't diminish at all, and it would be exactly the same. My process would be the same, that I make this stuff because I hear it in my head and I'm basically just dictating it. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it. And he said, well, that's what I was wanting you to hear. Because he said, for me, it's exactly the opposite. He said, I play music for the people, for the relationships, for, you know, the collaboration, for all that. And that's what energizes, you know, him as an extroverted person. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I can't believe two people could be completely different. But I kept thinking about that. And I'm like, I don't know how much of that is just a personality thing, or if it's the way that I came to music as a soloist versus, you know, playing in a band and playing in band context. But we all want what we don't have. And most of my musician friends in town are jazz players. And I'm always the one tagging along, you know, trying to fake some jazz so I can hang out with my friends and play. And I'm like, you know, it's lonely doing this as your main artistic outlet. But at the same time, I don't think I'd trade it, you know, for anything in the world, because all I have to have is that and an idea, and I can immediately realize the idea, you know, whether there's an audience for it or not. And I hope that I can continue to find an audience for it and in a context in which it's valued and, you know, hopefully maybe even a lucrative financially or otherwise. But, you know, even if not, it's still rewarding and it's what I want to do.
I'm glad to hear it. And I wouldn't be too concerned about that. And it seems to me that what you're describing is the difference between a player and a performer. And you don't have to be a performer to be a player, mm-hmm. but you do have to be a player to be a performer. Mm-hmm. But whether you choose to be a performer is secondary to what you do. And to be honest, too often I think people get so caught up in performance that they forget to be a player. Mm. It's dazzling, but it's not necessarily satisfying. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan Chicot recorded live in the Chattanooga Downtown Library. These sessions are recorded on Wednesday afternoons in the state-of-the-art recording studio on the second floor of the Chattanooga Public Library in downtown Chattanooga. After an almost six-month hiatus, we're back making recordings of Chattanooga-based musicians, but musicians from around the area are welcome. The sessions are produced, engineered, and mixed by Sam Manser. The executive producers for Live in the Library are me, Richard Winham, for WUTC, and Sam Manser for the Library. We will have another session recorded live in the Library next Friday afternoon here on Scenic Roots, Live in the Library.